Carla Falava, and welcome to the Global Bus Figure Success Podcast. I'm Andrew Fa'avali, your host. Every week I'll be chatting with successful Pacific people from across the globe, unpacking their stories and, more importantly, picking out insights, lessons and golden nuggets you can use to live your best life too. Tālofa lava, everyone. Mā lō lava soi fua manguia. This week is Samoan Language Week, so I hope everyone's celebrating, enjoying and embedding some of the Samoan language into their conversations this week, no matter how big or small it all counts, to celebrate such an eloquent and metaphorical language. And then here in Australia, it's the National Reconciliation Week, so we're celebrating and building on the respectful relationships between our Indigenous peoples here, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, and other cultures living on their land. I think when we celebrate these weeks focused on languages and cultures, we celebrate both the differences and diversity we have, as well as the sameness and shared spaces and connections we have as well. It's so good to have time, space, and focus on the diversity in our community, but also realizing and remembering that the values that underpin our cultures are very much the same. Our last show with Wayne Henry, my mate from school, who left school and jumped onto the factory floor and who now owns his own mortgage company, Wayne Henry Mortgages, was a really, really popular show. It had lots of downloads and lots of feedback, and we really appreciate the fact that we know that some people at least are listening to this thing. So please continue the feedback via our Instagram and Facebook pages. Just search for the Global Bus Figure Success Podcast. On both, there's a page for both. And also subscribe, rate and review our podcast on the various platforms. That'd be really appreciated. Okay, this week's guest is Leilehua Fa'anevai, a phenomenal Tongan woman who was born in Tonga and migrated to Brisbane, Australia with her family under somewhat controversial and political circumstances, and she'll flesh that out in this podcast. We're really blessed that she's been open and honest about that situation, and we know you'll find it interesting as well. So Leihua is a wife to Daniela, mother to one plus one on the way. She is a native titles lawyer, has her own law firm, which is called Trinity York Legal, shout out to Cheryl and Andrew, and owner of a kava cultivating business in Tonga with her husband, as well as a community servant across so many different initiatives and projects. I first met Leihua around 5 years ago when we met to discuss setting up the Pacifica Lawyers Association Queensland, and I've been blessed enough to call her my friend since then, and I've got the chance to watch her roll from one amazing project to the next. And so I'm really excited to bring this talanoa with this inspirational woman to you. She's pregnant at the moment, so I'm grateful that she accepted the invite to have a chat. And in saying that, I started out with asking her about some of the projects she has on at the moment.
Yep, sure. Thank you, Andrew, for this opportunity. I am currently working full-time until I go on maternity leave at the end of June with a team in Crown Law, and I'm in that position. I'm acting principal lawyer, so I do native title claims representing the state in Indigenous claims to land. I also part-time, when I can find time, I'm a director with Trinity York Legal and Migration. I started that up when I was on maternity leave last time because I've always had an interest in migration, and I always receive, as a lawyer, phone calls from generally after hours from Tongans or Pacific Islanders in general, asking for advice or assistance with their migration matters. And I've discovered I have a knack for that, having been raised by someone who used to do migration, my mum. She was quite high up in Tonga before we migrated when I was four. And migration's always been a thing that I understand and relate to, being a migrant myself. And on top of that, full-time mum, enjoying that, and then soon to be a mother of two. On top of that, I also volunteer. I am the secretary-elect for the Pacifica Lawyers Association of Queensland, Inc., and also the Brisbane Tongan Community. So they're both not-for-profit associations that basically provide or give a voice to either Tongans in the Brisbane Tongan community hat, for Tongan migrants and Tongan nationals in Brisbane, Queensland. And we've got a few projects under that organisations. So we've got the Queensland Tongan Language School about to launch the Pacifica TV and radio. We've also pushed for direct flights between Tonga and Brisbane, obviously on hold now because of the current closures. And with Pacifica Lawyers, it's a network of legal professionals with an ethnic background or a connection to the Pacific that provide some mentorship programs and just provides a network and support Pacific Island lawyers here in Queensland, because we're very limited in number. I think we're like under 30 people who are actually admitted, but hopefully that'll change in the future because we've got a high number of students coming through as well.
Yeah, and speaking about change, you know, it sounds like there's so much in that brief intro around what you're doing. But let's go back to migration, and you talked about your mum, because I know you're related to Professor Kone Halu Thaman, a legend of Pacific Studies. What were your mum and dad doing in Tonga, and what brought them to Brisbane?
Okay, so basically my parents were both police officers in Tonga, and my dad generally was, mum would say that he was not really a real one because he was in the band and they just toured around the world and played music. But he was still a police officer. So he's a musician. As you've just alluded to, my mihitanga, as our Tongan culture dictates. So they're the matriarchs in our family. So my dad's elder sister on his mum's side is Professor Konai Helu Thaman, and she's my namesake. So in that tradition, she named me. So she was one of my mentors growing up and still is my mentor. So she pushed my parents to educate both myself and my two brothers. So there's only three of us. And while we were in Tonga, certain situations developed where my mum, I can mention it here, I think I can, was the whistleblower in relation to Chinese passports, the Tongan passports that were being sold to the Chinese. And the people that were the barrier, I think, for my mother growing up when we were there, it made it difficult for us. But while that happened, she had the delegating power, or was the permit officer in the airport in Tonga. And so back then, immigration was under the police department. And so she headed up together with the CEO or the minister at the time for migration in Tonga. And so mum worked a lot and had, you know, varying hours. So I remember being babysat by police officers, migration officers. I even used to ask mum, is it true that I used to like come with you to the airport and stamp people's passports? And apparently that happened when I was three. So so when she discovered those passports, I could talk about this because mum would be happy that I do. And at that time, mum and dad had already decided to apply for permanent residency here in Australia to try and give us a better life. So they had just been granted that permanent residency back in the 80s. And in that time frame, mum discovered this illegal activity that was happening in Tonga at the time, and she made a report. So when she reported it to the minister, who are now all deceased, so it doesn't matter, and the powers that be back then, was told to quit. So she was forced out of the force and was, you know, declared a whistleblower. And that's basically what cemented our decision to migrate. So when we migrated, the difficulty in that, and I recall it because being the eldest and then my two brothers were still quite young, we had to leave the country without my mum. Sorry to be emotional. And we went to Fiji, my dad and I and my youngest brother, John, Janina, and because mum wasn't allowed to leave the country. They told her to quit, but then she couldn't quit because they wanted her to train someone up. So they said, you're given 6 months to train someone up, but you can't leave the country. So they even tried, this is the government representatives at the time, tried confiscating our passports and wouldn't let us leave the country. So in that sense, we just made the decision, we have to go. So we fled to Fiji and stayed with my auntie, Gonai, and then we made our way over to Australia. But I recall it because I was still quite young. And basically, And so basically, we went to Fiji, went back, and had to go back a few months later to try and get mum back. So obviously, she trained someone up and then they eventually let her go. But to this day, it's still an emotional point for my mum where she just couldn't get over it. Like, she did everything she could. She never took people's money when they came to pay for her to do their passports or do their permits to come overseas. But I think in that, it kind of, in her trials, she managed to triumph and push for a better future for us so that we can not be treated like that. And that's so in that, and Dad has always taught us knowledge is power. So growing up, we had those great mentors that, you know, pushed for a better education. Even though we were raised humble, we had to start back from scratch coming over from Tonga and having your qualifications not recognised here in Australia. And my parents both tried applying for the police force here in Australia, but they couldn't because, number one, they weren't yet citizens and their qualifications in Tonga were just not recognised. So they had to find any job that could just put food on the table. So I saw those sacrifices and, you know, my brothers and I made sure that we kept to the promise and we made a promise to our parents once we finish high school, we'll, you know, as long as we get something, a piece of paper, whether it's through TAFE or university, but having the benefit of, I think, Gornay and Randy and I think my first cousins who actually went through and finished degrees back then, because we grew up in Goodna. Like, I'm not sure most people know that when we migrated to Brisbane, we grew up in a commission home in Goodna. So we lived there for like over 13 years, but went to the private school there, so Westside Christian College, but they put us through private school. My parents had to find jobs that could pay for it. So they were cutting onions on the weekend or selling flowers on the side of the road, whatever it was, just to pay our private school because they saw the importance of educating us.
Okay, so it sounds like you know, your mother was a real stickler for the truth, and when she came across this corrupt thing, and maybe it was something that a lot of people turned a blind eye to at the time, and who knows, because I didn't even know this. I wasn't trying to probe the idea. I didn't have no idea about the story. We're going to kick off at such an emotional and it's cool. Well, it's cool to hear, but, you know, maybe at a point of reflection, when you reflect back on that as a really proud Tongan, and I'm sure your parents are really proud Tongans, what does that do to your identity and your patriotic lining?
Oh, at first, I think when I came to the realization of what had happened, because obviously at the time I was only four. Mm. So, you know, even though I'm emotional now, but it's because the constant storytelling. Mm. So Mum would remind us of where we came from and what we endured to get here. So she didn't want us to be, one of a better word, she didn't want us to be going down the same employment as she was only able to get. So, you know, she didn't want me just to be an admin officer or work in a factory for the rest of my life and limit myself to where I was growing up. She wanted us to develop dreams, as you can, if you want to call it that, and flourish, because she's like, it wasn't just Mum, it was also Dad. They saw the potential in us and, you know, and they always emphasised the fact that they made the sacrifices but still had the heart for the islands. And I think I still have that. Mm. My brothers still have it as well. And so growing up here, we were seen as Tongans. We had to basically respond as such. So when I grew up, I was quiet. You'd be surprised.
Really?
People don't believe me, but I was. But the reason why I was really quiet growing up is when we migrated, I don't think that many people had ever seen Polynesians. Mm. We came in the late 80s, so we lived in Melbourne first, and we lived in a predominantly European. I think there was only two Pacific Island families in our area, in Altona, in Melbourne, and it was two Tongan families. And so I used to get bullied for being brown. So I used to get, you know, chased around the playground, basically told to go back to my own country from a European, not an Indigenous, but a European. And so in that, I had to develop the thick skin and then I think kind of became the person that I am now. But like going back to your question, I never forgot where I came from, even though what had gone on, like we had endured it. But obviously Mum also separated that from our culture. Mum and Dad, you know, emphasised the fact that our culture is one thing, where we've got these four pillars of our culture. Tongans will, you know, the whakaveit gola about whakaapaapa, which is respect, ofa, which is mixed among that, and lototo, humility. And I think Dauhiva, which is keeping relations important and so forth. So in that sense, and also being immersed with our extended family, because my mum's parents and her sisters and her brother was already here in Melbourne. So we grew up, and then Dad's, you know, he had cousins and people and his extended family were in Melbourne, or still are in Melbourne. So we grew up with the extended, clan family, and we went to church every Sunday. We were seen as Tongans, even though we are now migrants here to this foreign country, but we continued our culture and we continued that link and always had the heart for home. And I had the benefit of going back to Tonga every Christmas. Cool. To be taught the Tongan Tau O Lunga. And I think also that was a way in which my parents made sure that we were not disconnected from Tonga. And we had Dad was raised by his great aunts, and we call them all our nanas. So we're very lucky to have a lot of elderly people that raised my dad, his aunties, basically. So they're the matriarchs as well of our family. And you'd be surprised, Andrew, they were actually missionaries to Samoa. Oh, really? So my great-grandfather, Sione Hafoka, is buried in Beulah.
Oh, wow.
So he was one of the missionaries that were sent over to Samoa in the, I think it's the late 1800s, and I've gone there twice. I've seen his tombstone, and I love the fact that us being told these stories, even though they're not documented, but they're handed down from generation to generation, and then going there and seeing it in the flesh, it's like, okay, this is really true. This is what happened. So most of them had raised my dad, so we had to look after our elders, our older generation, our mothers. So I went back a lot. Then eventually one of them came over. I call her my dad's adopted mum, Sela, and who's just my great grandmother's first cousin on her mum's side, but also kind of like a sister. So they were raised together. My nana never married, so they all helped her raise her children. So they're all our extra
nanas. Nana plus one, nana plus two. Yeah, it is amazing. I was watching this program the other weekend. It's a 4x4 adventure program. Yep. And they go all over Aussie, and these two Aussie dye-in-the-wool Aussie blokes, and they actually went up to the Torres Strait and they saw a burial ground, and there was a whole bunch of Samoan missionaries, and on the headstone it had born in Apia and then passed away. And I was like, man, we did breach borders and there was no lockdown. Given that you've come from a lineage of missionaries plus advocates and sticklers for the truth, was it always going to be that you're going to be a lawyer, or did that kind of develop?
I thought I'd be the first Tongan Mariah Carey. Or the first Tongan Kenny G. Ask my brothers.
Oh, really? Did you play the sax?
I played the alto saxophone, yes.
Oh, I did too, actually.
I loved music, but obviously that never happened, and my parents told me you need a fallback plan. So I think being developing that ability to be able to defend myself against bullies and then coming out of my shell, I became an advocate, and I just developed I think I already had the heart for service, because I saw it with my parents, and it was just a thing that I enjoyed. I discovered that I have a knack for speaking. I think most Polynesians do, because you practice at a young age from White Sunday.
Yeah, that's right.
But I never thought that I would just do law, but I'd always be a like I always wanted to go in and work for the Department of Foreign Affairs, go overseas, do something with my, because my second degree is a Bachelor of Arts and major in International Relations, but that hasn't happened. And I thought law would just be like a 2-3 year stint, but I've been practicing since admission in 2009, so over 10 years.
Yeah, and it's a really important part of the law or field of the law because as Indigenous people ourselves, but Indigenous to the Pacific Islands, we're talking about land and something we really understand as being a central part of who we are. So do you just want to give some insight on how it is working in Native Title and working around this concept that really highlights the differences between worldviews of the West and then of Indigenous or traditional cultures? Because land for one is just real estate. And land for the other is connected to who they are.
Oh, this is going to be a bit delicate.
Yeah.
And I must preempt this response in first saying this is Lelehua's opinion of it, not the office in which I work.
Or we could just talk broadly around that concept and we could talk broadly around the dynamic as a Pacific person working in that.
Oh. I agree. And in the first instance, I never thought that I think I kind of fell into this position because I never thought if I were ever to do Native Title, I loved it in university. I read Mabo. I would read the Western Australia Ward case, even though we didn't need to, in real property and it wasn't part of the exam. But only because you've alluded to, we as Indigenous people, we can relate to what they've been endured. Well, not necessarily because we haven't been taken over as such.
That's right.
You know, islands were colonized and Tongans were a protectorate. We always last remaining monarchy.
A point of pride. That's, and it's true, and it's something to be proud of.
Oh, Mate Matonga proud, man.
Yeah, for sure.
But in saying that, Mate Matonga, the Tongan motto, as you always, and relates in response to this question, because it's an important question for us Pacific Islanders or Pacific people, the Tongan motto is Otua Matonga ko hoku tofia, which basically means God and Tonga are my inheritance, and it connects you to the land. So when the Mate Matonga bend down and hit the ground, that's indicating their connection to the land. And I think the Indigenous Australian communities, not just the Aboriginal, but also the Torres Strait Islanders, they have that. And for the Western world to understand that connection to the land, even though they've been displaced in most instances because of the unfortunate history of this country, they're still connected. They may have been moved off their land and put into mission and camps, but because of their stories, because of the elders continuing to teach them about the land, it's part of you. Like, even though we're raised here in Australia or this is our adopted land, we still have that connection to our land in Tonga or Samoa or Fiji. And I think it's intermingled with our culture and our tradition. We maintain it through that, but also it's part of our blood. Like, you can never remove us from it because we're born of that land and continue to have that connection until death. But it's also inherited. I believe it's inherited and we're blessed. God gave us these different islands and lands because for us to be able to care for it, in that caring for it, we've developed that connection. So being able to showcase that, I think, you know, I do try when I represent the state to be quite fair. My preference is always working on claims where we as the state end up recognising Native Title. So that goes through the federal court system. And so when we have a determination of Native Title in the federal court, what the judge usually says is, we're not here to give you land. We're here to just recognise that you have always been the people of this land. So in a way, it's just the current autonomous government, because we still have to work within the realms of this nation, is basically it's trying to find that compromise between what had happened in the past and also the current interest and the current state of the country. And giving that recognition. So it's a complex area of law. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but I never thought that I would ever work for the state government. I've discovered that I think that I have been able to do some positive.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And try and assist, if I can, the Indigenous communities get the native title through a consent determination. But there are instances where I've been involved in trials over complex areas of land, but that's not something that I enjoy, but it's just part of my job. But in recent times, I've managed, I've been involved in consent determinations from Tully, the Gulne people. And these names, I never knew them before I even did native title. Like North Stradbroke Island, they're the Kwandamooka people's land. Like, have you, you don't know until you immerse yourself or until you actually put yourself in their shoes or actually come to realize that we are here and it's not our land. We're here to respect the traditional owners and the custodians of this land.
Yeah, I guess.
And we're grateful that they're letting us use it. So
Exactly. We can really empathize because we are from the same kind of mindset. And I think in terms of land, the easiest way I describe it to others is that, you know, back in Samoa, my granddad is buried outside the front. We're buried on our customary land. So if there's a spiritual connection, it's the closest thing to a literal spiritual connection that you can get. And the kids play on the tombstone, the parents meet on the tombstone, and the teenagers hang out on the tombstone. And it is sacred, but it's also connected to us. When I went back to Samoa the first time when I was like 11, that blew me away. That, oh man, we used to go to this place where everyone was buried, drive there, who knows what that land is. It's the council land back in New Zealand, and then move away. But this was a totally different flip on what it meant to be spiritually connected, not only to the land, but to your ancestors when they were all lined up right on that land. But respect to you, man, because, that's really important work, and we know that it could sometimes be tough for you, because when I was at law school, I used to think, oh, man, people used to say, oh, how do we use Western instruments to prove Indigenous concepts? And, you know, using the Torrens system and stuff like that to prove that that is your land. And you could be on whichever side of the debate, but the truth is we need to try to figure out how to do it, and you're an agent in that whole process. So kudos to you. What about Trinity York? You mentioned it. You've started while you're on maternity leave. It wasn't good enough just to be pregnant and dealing with another human in your body, but you went and decided to start a law firm.
I think this is one of the instances where I think you've said in your previous podcast, and it's a great question, is that, you know, God puts something in your heart, and either you do it or you die not listening to it and just ignoring it. So I've had it for, I think, oh, God's put it on my heart too, like in the fact that, like, I found my purpose. Like, there's one of my favorite verses is from Proverbs, which says, "There are many plans in a man's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails."
Wow.
So when I first got approached by one of my good friends, Cheryl, about her opening up her own law firm, while I was on mat leave, one of the things that she said to me was that, you know, I wouldn't be doing this without you. I'll go, well, is this first? Don't say yes, you're not going to do it. And I prayed over it. And it is, you know, being the primary breadwinner, I think most know in my family, I can't sacrifice that yet. And I enjoy native title. I believe that I was blessed with that position in Crown Law, because I found it hard to get a job when I first graduated and got admitted, because it was during the global financial crisis. But in saying that, I jumped in, thought I could do it. And while I was on mat leave, I had to obviously seek approval from the Ethics Standard Committee over at the Department of Justice. And when they approved it, that was my confirmation. I have to do this. And I already knew it in my heart, because for so many years I always had this, I could do this. and I've always been one of the type of people, and you probably know, is that I stand in my own shoes, and if I'm questioned, I will still stand there and argue. And that's always because I've always been raised as such, to believe that we're created in the image of God, beautiful, wonderful, and splendid, and knowledge is power. And, you know, my dad's always wanted, he did his own contracting business without a law, without a degree or anything in through the labor scheme, and pushed for the whole labor scheme, and then became a church minister. So, you know, and that was with no experience or no degree in business.
Mm.
So I couldn't say no. And I was getting a lot of requests for free legal advice on the side from Tongans. And it was hard for me to always say no, always being the type of person that I wanted to help.
Mm.
And I had to say no because I was limited to the work that I was doing at the State Department. But when I discovered that I could do both, limited to a few conditions, I just jumped at the opportunity. And it's been 3 years now. And we haven't had to really market the law firm. We've relied a lot on people we know.
Mm.
And I think there's just a need out there for our people. So I've got three directors, there's Cheryl, Andrew and myself. We all come from different backgrounds and we've got an office just in the city, so it makes it easier. And most of what I do, like I said, is because of my interest in migration. I just continue to assist where I can on that instance, but I'm hoping it'll grow. We're all hoping that it'll grow and flourish in the future. And on that side note, I also, while I was on maternity leave, started up the Filioko Maui, which is a kava plantation.
That's right, the kava business.
I'm not sure you're aware of that. So that's more my husband's job, but I'm the boss at the moment until the investor gets her investment. And we're currently working on pushing for this second pilot phase two gava, commercial importation of gava. So the department here has sought, the Australian government, the relevant department has sought submissions from the various stakeholders. So hopefully, and it's all in God's timing, because I didn't think that I would be on maternity leave and have more time to do more of this work. So we were already planning before I got pregnant with baby number two to harvest this year.
Awesome.
So we're looking to harvest. So I call them my other babies. So we've got like a five-year-old cropped, four-year-old, three-year-old. So it's like we plant and harvest and all that every year, so that it just becomes, you know, a rotating thing. And the reason behind that is also an idea that my dad had, is that, you know, so that we can be our own bosses in the future and have the capital to tap into and work on our dream projects. So I'm hoping that will come into, and it will, I'm sure it will. God doesn't disappoint if nothing's impossible. So it's happening, even with COVID-19.
And that's it, because I've seen on TV recently that, you know, they're starting to advertise kava pills or wellness supplements, and they're saying kava as used in the Pacific. And then in my mind, I was like, man, is that another one of those things that they're going to go and use and exploit while sitting under our noses? You know, while we've got all the resources, that they come and, you know, hug us and say hi and then take the stuff.
No, it's actually a push from the Fijian government. So Fiji Gava is one of the big businesses for Fiji, and Vanuatu's been exporting for years as well. I think Tonga's just starting. Awesome. We've just been, you know, selling it locally and exporting it to like the cover clubs overseas, to the diasporas. But, you know, I'm not a cover drinker, my husband is, but if I can make money from it, sure.
Yeah, and that's what's good, that we're taking ownership and control of our resources and taking them to market. There was another thing that you said in there, because you were going to do the law firm, you were already taking clients, or, well, you weren't taking clients, they were your family. You were getting fielding calls from your family and stuff like that. You're pregnant at the moment. You work with Brisbane Tongan community, Pacifica TV and radio, the church you're a big part of. So, because I know there'll be a lot of students out there who are inundated as well, how did you learn to say no, or is that an ongoing struggle?
Oh, it's an ongoing struggle. Especially being Pacific Islanders, we're always a yes people, yes ma'am, yes sir type of personality, and that comes across when you jump into the workforce. And I think it's just because we've always been a yes sir, yes ma'am to our parents, so we treat any elder the same.
Mm.
So I've now just discovered that I need to concentrate on me as well, because, you know, with all the recent mental health issues and everything, not saying that I have major issues with that, but it's just, you need to take the time out to rest, the time out to concentrate on your families. So it's a constant struggle for me. I'm learning that I've discovered that I am now a senior professional.
You've clicked over.
I've always thought that I was still junior. So I've managed to then tap into the ability to delegate. I've got students that are hungry for development and developing their skills. So through the Pacifica Lawyers Association, I've managed to hone in and get two students to come in and intern at Trinity York. Obviously, it's all voluntary at the moment, but that has given me the ability to not concentrate too much on the work that I do there. And Cheryl's managed to, supervise them, but then I do as well when I can, because, and one of the other reasons why I said yes to Cheryl is when my grandmother, the adopted grandmother that I was referring to before, when they migrated, I didn't realise that when my parents went to Tonga to become church ministers that her visa still hadn't been granted for 15 years.
Wow.
And she was still on a bridging visa. So while I was working full-time with Crown Law, I managed to argue with the department and get her a departmental ministerial intervention, and that eventuated to her getting her permanent residency. So in that, I discovered, I actually do this on the without sleep. You've always got obligations as a Pacific Islander, not to your family, but to your church, your youth group. Now they have the GPA and the QTPA and the UQSPIA, so they're quite active as well. So there's always a juggling, trying to juggle your priorities. And I hope that answers your previous question, Andrew.
Yeah, because, that delegation part of responsibilities is a big part. But what about if you just have to say no? And the other part of that question is the business side. How do you get them to pay?
Well, I've learned to say no, and if they don't pay me, then I'm not going to do it.
How did you learn?
And if they don't want to pay me, I just refer them to someone else.
Okay, yeah, fair enough, eh?
Yeah. So I have a rule of thumb that I don't take on family. So yeah. I don't take on my first cousins. I give them to Cheryl. Mm-hmm. Like, not that I have had that situation, or if my close family that I do trust and know that will pay, I offer to do it pro bono. Like, I'm happy to do it pro bono, and that's when I give the opportunity to the students, the interns, to draft up the submissions, work on the stat decks, and I just settle it. And then in that instance, they get the experience. I don't spend the time because I don't have time. And I think now, with my family and colleagues, understanding that we wear multiple hats and are always constantly busy. Unfortunately, money is time these days. And when I do say no, I have to explain to my family, if I don't get paid, I can't feed my child. I can't give her nappies. You have to understand that. And also in that instance, because I'm now a boss in our small law firm, I have the ability to offer installment payments. So instead of, you've got 14 days to pay this tax invoice, I'm happy to give clients, and most of my clients that are Tongan always ask for that. Mm. So we don't do legal aid for that reason. You can't pay our bills. The Tongans are more than happy to do installments, and if they need extensions, happy to give extensions, because we've all been there, we've all been there trying to submit your application by due date, needing help, but not being able to pay for it. I think that's one of the options that I give them. And my clients still keep on coming, and a few of them have referred other clients as well. So because we've been able to successfully assist them with their visas. So that's just how we're developing our clientele in that front.
It's a tough question, but really a business owner is best placed to answer it. And the reason why I ask it is because a lot of Pacific people might expect it to be free, but actually the transaction is a value exchange. And so if you're asking for it to be free, then you're kind of not valuing that person's expertise, especially you are a senior lawyer in your government job and you're a director of a law firm, and so to do it free, your hourly rate must be really high at the market. So imagine how much they're asking for. And it's a tough dance to dance for a lot of Pacific business owners. But you've done all that, but now you're a working mum. I think this is one of the most amazing things. Obviously, you've got one child and one on the way. How are you doing all this as a working mum?
Oh, I'm blessed. I'm blessed. I still have my parents around and Nella. So my husband flies out to Tonga to check on and work and assist his dad with the guava plantation and comes back. But he's been stuck in Tonga for the last, since we were all together in Fiji.
Wow,
so
that was ages ago.
Since January. He was supposed to come back in March, but he's now booked and God willing, nothing happens, but he's on a flight tomorrow. Back and then we'll be spending 2 weeks in a hotel.
And shout out to Daniela over in Tonga, who's looking after the plantation and doing the hard work.
So in I've got the support around me, and having been raised in an extended and holistic type community, I have that benefit. So even when my parents went here, I sent over my sister-in-law and her kids a few years ago, and they stayed with Matilita while I worked. And then also we had a few international students here who happened to be my first cousin. So also helping out. But I'm finding now at the age of 3, she wants to go to school every day. So, so trying to explain to her the virus and the lockdown, she's like, no, I want to go to school. So in that sense, I think we have to think of it in the future when she is older and also with bub number 2. But I think coming from a big family, it helps. Yeah, it helps.
And when is baby due?
Baby's due at the end of July.
Awesome.
Baby boy, so yes.
You got the one of each.
And the lawyer in me was like, yes, we have a boy to register our property in Tonga under.
Yeah, so tell us about that for the Tongans who don't know much about the laws in Tonga. So you have to be a male to register your land?
Unfortunately, even after several land commissions and so forth, the Land Act in Tonga is still set where in which women can't own land. And to inherit land in Tonga, you need to be a legitimate male heir. So so Matilita wouldn't be able to inherit land from Daniela. So the work around it is, and I think it complements our culture in which women are considered higher than men.
Yeah, I was going to ask because it's a matriarchal society. But
it's a matriarchal society. So your father's sisters, they're considered your whahu or your mehitanga, they're considered higher than you. And I think that was the balance back when they, drafted the legislation. I'm not sure, but, and in some instances, there are examples of where women misuse that power in some sense, where they end up taking their brother's children away from them without consent. But in that sense, it's still like, that's what we've got to work around. So when I found out that we're having a baby boy, the lawyer in me was thinking, yes, yeah. We can register any property that we have in Tonga under baby's name. But in saying that, you can also, women tend to take out leases over some property in Tonga. So there you can do like 99-year leases and take over parts of your family estate. But in family estates are inalienable, so they get handed down from generation to generation. Male-born heirs get handed down. And because the property is not – there's not that much land to give around, I think that's probably a reasoning behind it. And or either, now you can buy out property, but if I were to buy it, I'd have to put it in Daniela's name.
Yeah. I really like that you're really proud of your Tongan heritage. You know, you take your Tonganness everywhere you go. we've known each other for a little while now, and I know that of you. If I know anything of you, is that you take your identity with you. What does it mean for you to be a Tongan, especially when you're navigating quite white office space and things like that?
I think any Tongan would say that we're quite proud people. Matima Tonga is a clear example of that.
Yeah.
Most of the Tongans that probably were cheering for them had probably never watched rugby league, but when the boys decided to, you know, not take the money and basically play for their country, notwithstanding that they would lose this huge pay packet at the end of the day, the fact that they're representing their ancestors and their parents, it's a huge thing. And I think the same with Samoans, if with the podcast with Apollo, it's so true. It goes to the heart of things. And you're right, I take my Tonganess everywhere. And when I was first became a lawyer, I found it hard. I tried too hard to be white because I didn't want to be seen as a different person. But I went to an interview, one of my first interviews with an agency, trying to get just a paralegal law clerk type job after I graduated from law. And after the interview, like, I spoke like a white person, I dressed up like a white person, straightened my hair and everything. And afterwards, he's like, "You're Tongan." And I go, "Yes, I am." He basically said, "You should talk about that." And so from that interview, that's when I then developed, you know, the knack. And also, I think, you know, a bit of that story as well. When I first went into the legal profession, I was judged from the get-go. And there were situations where people were being given opportunities when I had been there or had studied with this person, but because that other person was nepotism, basically, which you never think happens in Australia, but it does. and you know, and because their mother was the judge, so she got the job. So and I even got I had to transcribe for like 11 months as an admitted solicitor before I was recognized for my skill. And that kind of that made me question who I was. That made me question where my abilities. Like, you know, in law school, you're so confident, you know who you are. And it made me question whether I could be a lawyer when I was a transcriber. And I actually went to the manager and asked her, "Why am I not being given the opportunities to showcase my talent as a lawyer? Like, I've gone to law school just like anybody else, but I've been trumped for some reason." And she basically said, "It's your personality. You're too loud and you're too friendly." And I said to her, "Well, you need to go and tell those people that are saying that I'm too friendly that they need to go and read the history books on Tonga, because Captain Cook called us the Friendly Island, and I am not changing my personality just because somebody else doesn't like it."
That's awesome. How can you be too friendly?
Oh, I have no idea. Apparently you have to be a certain type of person. I wouldn't say which office this was in, but you have to be a certain type of person, and that's just what they wanted. But because I was too, like, I worked in chambers at that time, and because I was too, I think, outspoken and friends with people, and I was friends with the director and so forth of this office, and was involved in the social committee. But I'm just charismatic. Like, we always try and joke around, and that just helps us be who we are. So in that sense, I had to prove. I was like, I ignored her. I'm like, I don't care. So, and in that sense, it made me stronger in my faith, because then I had to just hold down and basically have faith that God had another door that would open. Because I always thought I wanted to work for this office. I want to fight against crime and. But it never happened. And that's why I say my position now in Crown Law, working in Native Title, is a blessing, because then I got a phone call because I went for an interview with this Crown Law, and they said after the interview, "Oh, you're too overqualified," because I was an admitted solicitor applying for a paralegal job, and they told me that I'm overqualified for the job. Obviously, yes. And they said they'll keep my resume on the books for 6 months, and if anything else happens, they'll ring me. I never believed that line, but that actually happened. 6 months later, I got a phone call and they offered me the job. And I think it's just because we were unknown. We're still quite small. We're a minority in the legal profession. So not many people know our skill set and our background. In the office that I was working in, all the Pacific Islanders that they saw were the people that they were prosecuting. So in that sense, and I was the only Polynesian at that time in that office. But now that we've got many students coming through that are wanting to be legal professionals, I can't wait. I can't wait to see them flourish. It's not like places like Auckland where you've got history, set history, and there are people that have already set the ground for the next generation to come up. I think we're now the ones, Heilala and I, yourself as well, Andrew, are setting that. But like you, going back to my Tonganess, I've always had it. I think being proud of it and having parents that are proud to be Tongan. And when we watch rugby, for example, we were a big rugby family. We always go for the team that had the most Tongan. So we went for Wallabies because, you know, Dogdai Geffel and Willie O were in the Wallabies. But when Lomu played in the All Blacks, we went for the All Blacks, even though we never lived in New Zealand.
Yeah. So. That's awesome because I just really I want to touch on the Queensland Tongan school, language school. So I think that's going to be a legacy piece for you guys. I think that's brilliant. I'd love it if there was a Samoan one. I think I can assume why you set it up, but can you explain, I want to hear from you, why you guys set the Queensland Tongan Language School up?
Oh, like you said, it's a legacy for our children. After becoming a mother, and I think you would relate once you and Nicola had your kids, is that you want to give something for them in the future. And being raised, like we migrated when I was 4, I never got the opportunity to actually learn proper Tongan in a classroom. The Tongan that I learned was from my elders and in church. And whenever I ask mum, can you teach me the Tongan, you know, the grammar? She's like, go read the Bible. When we were young in Melbourne, she managed to convince the principal at the school that we were at to employ her sister, who was a teacher in Tonga, to teach us Tongan. So I got taught the alphabet up until grade 1, and then we moved from that area, so she was no longer teaching us Tongan. But I think the Samoans, they have the benefit of when you're in the church environment, they have those classes and the Sunday schools and so forth. And I think, you know, you guys managed to maintain that language more so in that environment setting. But with the Tongans, there wasn't like a set place where children could go and immerse themselves in the language unless they were involved in some youth group or church settings. And not everybody goes to a Tongan-speaking church. Mm. So I saw it more so for my daughter, like, and the vision behind it for me, and I can't speak for everybody in the Brisbane Tongan community, was that, you know, being married to a Tongan who was raised and born in Tonga and who still talks Tongan. So the main language we speak at home is Tongan. So I didn't want her to be whebarangi when she goes back to Tonga and not be able to communicate with her first cousins and her grandparents. So that's why I made a promise with my husband is to take our children to Tonga every year so they can practice her Tongan. But I thought that wasn't enough. So when we got the opportunity and saw that there were other language schools, and I'm hoping that there'll be a Samoan because I've always wanted to learn Samoan, is for us to start that. And we managed to get, and it was all gone. Like we prayed over it, worked towards this goal, managed to get it up and running. It still is running even throughout COVID-19. Griffith University at the Logan campus accepted for the school to use the facilities there, so and free of charge.
Wow.
That's why I say all God, because what university is going to allow us to use their campus free of charge on a Saturday? But once we started, we discovered there were so many Tongans that we didn't know in the community. There's like Hafekasi Tongans, people married to Tongan, and now being able to offer the classes via Zoom online during COVID-19. We're getting students from the Northern Territory. We're getting students from WA. So we're hoping we can maintain that once the classrooms open up again at Griffith. And having that ability to also share our culture, not just our language, but also our history to our Tongan students. I'm also going to enroll in the advanced class once I have time. When I was growing up, I never knew that my auntie Gonai was a professor in, you know, education, and she wrote poems on You, the Choice of My Parents. So so I never got that benefit, and I want to be able to, you know, share that with my daughter where she can learn the scholars, the Ebele Hau offers, the scholars from our not our small islands, but our big oceans.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. You know, it really does sound like, it's funny because things come around. You want to take your kids back every year, just like you were taken back every year. and you want to teach the language and you want to teach the tradition and custom. And Nick's a quarter Tongan, her granddad was Tongan. And so we're interested in that language school too. And we see, you know, our cousin Junior and Catherine took their kids over.
Yeah,
really looking forward to enrolling the kids. But I think that there are so many things, aspects of your life that are legacy, you know, traversing this native title thing, the Tongan language school, starting up Trinity York Legal and Migration. And it's really driven from a beautiful place of service, and it's been role modeled from your parents who stood up for the truth and who stood up for justice. And that's what I can see you doing. Any last tips for, mostly for students who are coming up? Because I think a lot of students will tune into this one, especially those in law school, but let's not narrow it to law. Any tips for Pacific Island students coming up through university, really?
My only tip is don't give up, and the sky's the limit. If your dream is to become the first Pacific Island Prime Minister of Australia, go for it. If your dream is to become a rock star, go for it. Work at it. Don't give up. And I come from a place of faith, but even if you're not a person of faith, work hard at your dream. Don't let other people put you down just because you're young, but set that example by showcasing your talent, and also use the people around you. You've got family, loved ones that care for you. Don't ignore them. They're there to help you, even though some of them may not have degrees or are not studying, but they're your first teachers in life, like your parents, your grandparents, and they would have prayed over you, or they would have, you know, they cared for you. And they still care for you. So in that sense, and if you don't have that community around you, there are services, I think, available for students and also professionals, like for Pacific lawyers or even Brisbane Tongan community. We're happy to help out. But there are so many other services available. Like, I used to volunteer for Women's Legal Service. If you're going through any DV, that's also a great, you know, legal clinic. And if your dream is something that you're being told by someone you're not good enough or can't do it because, you know, you're not smart enough, well, show them, prove them wrong. Don't let it put you down. Like, I had an uncle that told me that I wasn't smart enough to be a lawyer. Who's laughing now? He's now asking me for legal advice.
All right, let's get a call to action on this, because, you know, your auntie is a legend in Pacific studies. Choose one poem and let's get them to dig that one out. And, you know, the one that you think will impact them the most from Professor Konai.
Okay. My favourite poem from my auntie, all respect to her, is actually the one that I mentioned before, You, the Choice of My Parents. I'll read it out, and I think it's a great idea to get the students or whomever. I'm happy to receive any comments on analysing this poem, because I never got the opportunity to do so. But I understand in Tonga they have a syllabus in the schools where they break down auntie's poems, and this is one of the ones. Brilliant. It's actually, my auntie did tell me that they've translated it into Chinese and Indian. So it relates. I've used it in the past. And I'll read it out now. You, the choice of my parents, you come clad in your fine mats and tupper cloth, your brown skin bursting with fresh perfumed oil, your eyes shining like stars in a clear night, you, the choice of my parents. You will bring them wealth and fame with your Western-type education and second-hand car, but you do not know me, my prince, save that I am firstborn and have known no other man. I fit your plans and schemes for the future, but you cannot see the real me. My face is masked with pretense and obedience, and my smiles tell you that I care. I have no other choice. The priest has left the altar now and the dancing has begun. I see myself dying slowly to family and traditions, stripped of its will and carefree spirit, naked on the cold and lonely waters of a strange family shoreline, alienated from belonging truly. I love as a mere act of duty. My soul is far away, clinging to that familiar ironwood tree that heralds strangers to the land of my ancestors. I will bear you a son to prolong your family tree and fill the gaps of your genealogy. But when my duties are fulfilled, my spirit will return to the land of my birth, where you will find me no more except for the weeping wallows along the shore.
And the big smile at the end. That's awesome.
Listening to that, you get what is the meaning behind the poem is.
Exactly.
And why Indians relate to it. More so than Tongans and Tongans now.
No, that's awesome. And what a way to close it. Thank you so much, Lehua. You're a superwoman. You're a working mum, and you're not just a working mum, but you're working in really important spaces. You're not only an employee, but you're a business owner. You've got businesses across in the Pacific and here in Australia. And then you serve so much. You serve the community so much in various ways with Brisbane Tongan Community, the language school, the Pacifica TV and radio, the church, Pacifica Lawyers Association Queensland, and so forth. I know I've missed some, but the world is better because of your service, and I know that it's just a continuation of the legacy your mum and dad and your grandparents have role modelled to you. So thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. I didn't know it would go so deep so quick. It's kind of like the Gold Coast beaches, you know. Sometimes you step in and it goes straight deep.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I really appreciate it.
Well, I didn't know either, but Mum's already given me the okay. She wants me to write a book about it. So
awesome. Well, maybe you can just transcribe these.
Yeah, true. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me. And honestly, all glory to God, man. I couldn't do it without
Amen.
without upstairs.
All right, that's our show. Firstly, if you have any reflections or comments on the poem by Professor Kornei Haluthaiman, please send Lehua a message through her Insta and or her Facebook, which will be on the show notes. I think she's really keen to talk about it and break it down with other people, so please send her a message. And also look up Professor Kornei Haluthaiman's other works, which often speak to culture, so I think you'll find it really interesting. Otherwise, hope you enjoyed this chat with my proud Tongan friend, a woman who walks out the Tongan motto of God and Tonga being her inheritance, and someone whose life, be it at home, in community, at work, or even in business, is one that is driven to serve and extend legacy. Please check out the show notes for the links to all of her projects, from Trinity York to PLAQ to Brisbane Tonga Community, etc. Our next show will be a groundbreaker and one that I'm really excited to bring you, because we have our first guest from Micronesia. From the island of Guam in the North Pacific, we have Joey Kanga, who is based out of California. He's the co-owner and radio host on Island Block Radio, which is based in Hollywood. He's a producer, a creative director, and program director, as well as a musician. So Joey works alongside our former guest, Coach V. So shout out to Coach Viliami for the hookup. Can't wait to bring that one to you. Joey's been doing great things up in California for the Pacific communities up there, and it's great to connect with another brother from the Pacific based in the States. Okay, well, that's us for this week. Again, have a great week. Thanks as always for tuning in. God bless one and all, and take care.